Chapter 10 to me has been a chapter that has really kind of just brought things down the funnel, so to speak. And here we are now, just so close to the final days of the life of Christ. And what Jesus has said in the 10th chapter has really just put the Jews on edge. And they're already on edge. I mean, it's just now we're coming to that pinnacle of where they just can't stand even to see Jesus, it would appear. And when Jesus said in chapter 10, "I and my Father are one," in verse 30, I think they just kind of went like, they were over the top, you know, at that. They took up stones again to stone him. And Jesus still had opportunity to say some things, you know, to them, you know, "Many good works I have shown you from my Father. For which one of these works do you want to stone me?" And it's almost like he's saying, like, really, have you thought this through? I mean, have you really just kind of thought about the evidence? And when you consider the evidence, which they were not denying, you know, you really want to do this? Well, their minds have made up. And I think in chapter 11, this has become so very evident and so clear where their minds and where their hearts are at. And so, verse 39, "Therefore they sought again to seize him, but he escaped out of their hand." I've sort of lost track now of 4 or 5 times John has recorded something similar to that, that he has managed to escape them. And it's because, as we have seen before, it wasn't time yet. And yet we're almost to that point now where it is time. And so in verse 40, we're down on page 35, you know, when the Jews tried to seize Jesus, he went beyond the Jordan. And in chapter 10, verse 40, it says that he went away again beyond the Jordan to the place where John was baptizing at first. And he stayed, there he stayed. And many came to him and said, "John performed no sign, but all the things that John spoke about this man were true." And many believed in him there. That's kind of an interesting text to me. Insightful that, you know, there's just a lot of people at this point that know or have heard the things that Jesus says, or they have heard others talking about him. I mean, I just can't imagine going anywhere in Judea and someone saying, "Jesus, who's that?" I mean, Jesus of Nazareth, they knew who that was. They had heard these things and the signs and the miracles, you know, that he had done. Wow. You know, were so evident. But so now, you know, he goes again, you know, beyond the Jordan to the place that John was baptizing. This is a little interesting to me. We talked about this way at the very beginning when John was baptizing. But one thing we didn't talk about, I don't believe, is that there are two sites that some debate, which place is it where John was baptizing? And I don't think we talked about that. We talked about, you know, Bethany beyond the Jordan being down here. Sea of Galilee up here, you know, Dead Sea, Jerusalem, just across the Jordan over here, which would be 35 miles or something like that away. Still pretty good ways, you know, from Jerusalem. And then there are some who would say that Bethany beyond the Jordan, you know, Sea of Galilee, Dead Sea, Jerusalem, Bethany beyond the Jordan is up over here. Well, that's a pretty big difference, you know. I mean, that's a long way. And there's arguments that some have made on both, I understand. And I'm not really going to just, you know, talk about those arguments a lot. I just want us to know and understand, okay, there are two places that some have tried to say was where John was baptizing at originally. Now, one of the reasons, I guess a primary reason why I kind of subscribe to the idea that Bethany beyond the Jordan is this site down here, it's because of this text coming up in chapter 11. You know, that word is sent to him that his friend Lazarus is sick and dying, and Jesus travels there to him. And depending on how you look at how long did it take Jesus to get there, did he travel it in 1 day or 2 days, you know, this here seems to be a whole lot more likely to me. Even if he had 2 days to travel, this is a long way. And I just don't see how he could have traveled. I mean, if this is 35 or 40 miles, you know, across there, I mean, to me, that's 2 days of travel, of pretty hard travel when you're doing it on foot. You know, I mean, this is a whole, this is 100 miles, you know, or thereabouts. You know, that's a long way. I'm just not getting that part, you know. Rick.
I wasn't here for that class when this was discussed the first time. I'm sure I would have said this because I never keep my mouth shut when I have an opportunity to open it. Another reason I believe it might be there is because it's very interesting that the children of Israel were 40 years in the wilderness and crossed the Jordan right there before they entered Jericho.
Yes.
Jesus was 40 days in the desert.
Yes.
And crossed the Jordan right there when John baptized him before he entered into the promise. You know, I just think that there's such a parallel there. It's kind of hard to think.
That is a good point. That's a good point. And earlier when we talked about this, you know, back in the early part of John, really didn't even introduce the idea that there was two places at some respect. We didn't want to go there at that time. But now we need to know this and just understand that, okay, well, some say it's way up there. But it's just not making sense to me that it would be up there for a number of reasons.
We also had the scribes and Pharisees that came down when John was...
They went to see him. That's right.
Okay. And you know good and well, they're not going to travel that far north.
It just seems much less likely. In that regard. That, now, one of the reasons why some have looked at this spot up here is because there's a pretty good spot and a good pool there, water source, where baptizing could have been done, and maybe even where baptizing was done of some type at some time. But when we're talking about John the Baptist and Jesus going to him and being baptized and those things, yeah, I think it's more of this right here. We looked at these some pictures like this before, and we talked about this in some depth. I just want to kind of throw this back up again, you know, that this seems to be, you know, the sites that would be here, Bethany beyond the Jordan. And we talked about it a little bit last time, that there are those today, I mean, who would just go to, you know, just take any opportunity they could. If they're in Israel, they're going to go there so that they can be baptized, as though being baptized in Jordan today makes something special about baptism to them. I would struggle with that in a lot of different ways, but just kind of putting this in mind as we're going through John chapter 10, verse 40, and understanding that Jesus went away, again, beyond the Jordan to the place where John was baptizing at first. And when he was there, just think about some things that happened there, that many came who had previously heard John the Baptist. I mean, back in chapter 1, it was John who was preparing the way for Christ. There were those who heard him. There were those who were baptized in the baptism of John, the baptism of repentance. And so they heard John as they preached the kingdom that was at hand, and the one who is greater than I, whose sandal I'm not worthy to latch. You know, there were those who heard that. And now they've come back when they've heard that Jesus is there. Because it would seem that was a little period of time, you know, that Jesus was there. And many believed on him. Well, why did they believe on him? I mean, when they went there. I mean, why did they believe on Jesus? What were some reasons that would be brought to mind?
Everything that John said about him was confirmed by Jesus himself.
Yeah. You know, John performed no sign. And you know what? I hadn't even thought about that until I read this again. John performed no sign. Okay, it says, but all the things that John spoke about this man, speaking of Jesus, is true. I mean, here again was evidence that could not be denied. Everything that John spoke about this man was true. And so that, you know, caused, and many more believed in him there when they came there and they saw him.
The Jews were big on warning signs. They were always asking Jesus for a sign.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what this is teaching us is that John performed no signs.
Mm-hmm.
They still believed because the things he said were true. And what that tells us today is that we can believe on Jesus based on the evidence provided for us.
Without sign.
Without sign.
Absolutely.
And a lot of these Pentecostal folks who pretend that they can perform miracles, they can't.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because they want to instill faith in the hearts of people. But we don't need that to instill faith.
That everything is based on a sign. No. That's not evidence. All right? Let's think about this. Were you going
to
say that?
I was, you know, when the Pharisees sent some officers to arrest Jesus, they came back saying, never a man spoke like this man. And if these people are hearing him speak, and I think just hearing him talk and what he would say would probably be convincing if their heart were open. Obviously, that's the whole point of Scripture.
Yeah, if their heart was open. As we roll into the 11th chapter here, we talk about the death of Lazarus. It's going to be the seventh sign recorded in John's Gospel, records seven signs. And again, just a very powerful testimony of the deity of Jesus. Well, to some, that's going to cause some to believe. It's going to make the Jews just even more angry and become more drastic in what they want to do to stop Jesus. On the bottom of page 35, Jesus was called to the place in the wilderness let me back up. Remember, Jesus is at Bethany beyond the Jordan, that place in the wilderness. Jesus was called from the place in the wilderness with the news of the illness of a dear friend. Lazarus was sick unto death, and his sisters, Mary and Martha, undoubtedly thought that if Jesus came quickly, he could be healed. Jesus would come to Lazarus. But he came with another plan. Takes us to the story. John chapter 11, we begin reading in verse 1. Now a certain man was sick, Lazarus of Bethany, the town of Mary and her sister Martha. It was that Mary who anointed the Lord with fragrant oil and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick. Interesting point. We stop here for just a moment. Okay, when does Mary anoint the Lord? It's chapter 12. Why is he? What happened here? Why is he talking about this now? Does it ever strike you here? He's talking about, you know, it's sort of like the Apostle John is saying, remember, it was Mary. You know, just so you know which Mary, Martha, and Lazarus we're talking about, it was Mary who anointed the Lord with fragrant oil. Well, we're not there yet.
We don't have to be there yet.
Well, we don't have to be yet. I mean, but also, when was John writing this?
After both of
you. This was years later, you know, after these events had taken place. It's just interesting that he's kind of included that as he's explaining, you know, Mary and Martha. Remember, the Mary that anointed Jesus is the one I'm talking about. Even though that doesn't actually happen in his record until chapter 12. Okay, so we've got that. Therefore, verse 3, therefore his sisters sent to him saying, Lord, behold, he whom you love is sick. When Jesus heard that, he said, this sickness is not to death, but to the glory of God, that the Son of God may be glorified through it. Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that he was sick, he stayed two more days in the place where he was. Then after this, he said to his disciples, let us go to Judea again. His disciples said to him, Rabbi, lately the Jews sought to stone you, and you are going there again? Jesus answered, are there not 12 hours in the day? If anyone walks in the day, he does not stumble because he sees the light of this world. But if one stumbles in the night, or if one walks in the night, he stumbles because there is no light in him. These things he said to him, and after that he said to them, our friend Lazarus sleeps, but I go that I may wake him out of sleep. And his disciples said, Lord, if he sleeps, he will get well. However, Jesus spoke of his death. But they thought that he was speaking about taking rest in sleep. Then Jesus said to them plainly, Lazarus is dead. And I am glad for your sakes that I was not there, that you may believe. Nevertheless, let us go to him. And then Thomas, who is called Didymus, said to his fellow disciples, let us also go, that we may die with him. Interesting introduction into that story, isn't it? I mean, we can see there's kind of multiple things going on. Evidently, his disciples, as in the apostles, were with him at Bethany beyond the Jordan. They've been there for a little while. Word comes to them about Lazarus. And so they're debating, why, Jesus? Why would you want to go back? I mean, for one thing, just from the physical standpoint, wait a minute, if he's sleeping, he'll take rest and he'll do better. They didn't even understand what was going on here until Jesus said, no, he is dead. He's already died. Now they've got to really be wondering, well, why are we going back? Because they remember well what happened when they were there. You know, that the Jews were intent on killing Jesus. So where's Bethany? Let's think about this for just a moment. I mean, it's one of the suburbs of Jerusalem, so to speak. You know, not that it was looked at in that time, but just a little bit closer picture of the same map, you know, Bethabara across the Jordan. Here's the Jordan, you know, right here. And over here's Bethany. It's just 2 miles from Jerusalem. And so, you know, it's maybe a 2-day journey walk. Maybe it's less than that. And I'm not exactly sure how to sort this out. These kinds of things I'm just not really good at. So it's 4 days we have in total here, right? Is one of the days consumed by a messenger coming from Mary and Martha to Jesus? Is that one day? And then Jesus waited 2 days? And then there's 1 day to travel? I mean, that's a 40-mile foot trip in 1 day. That seems like a lot to me.
875 people below sea level up to 1,500.
That's another thing. You know, I mean, it's a hard walk. You know, I've hiked 20 miles in a day. I didn't the next day. You know? I mean, you know, some things you only have to do once to know that I ain't going to do that again. You can't make me. You know? Yeah, but what about the disciples? Because there's others with him now. And then I thought about that too. You know, I thought, well, like, Jesus had strength that we don't understand and know. But what about the apostles? They were traveling with him too, because they were there when they got to Bethany. They were with him. So I don't know exactly how to sort that out. I just want you to think about it a little bit. And you get that worked out, please tell me. I'm sure they were in good shape. Well, and they walked a lot. I mean, they walked everywhere, more so than what we
walked.
Okay, that's right. That's true, too. And so that brings us back to a more reasonable thought of there was 2 days of travel. You know, that he waited 2 days, and then they had 2 days of travel to go.
He waited so he would die.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, that's right. That's a good point. I was reading something today or yesterday where someone was trying to make this point or argument. You know, how much time was there for travel time, you know? I thought, well, I've never worried about that part too much. I just want you to think about it, because people bring those things up. It's kind of like, where was Bethany beyond the Jordan? You know, we should just know that there's some different things, different views that people have on that, that sometimes have that in mind.
I think it would also be wrong for us to assume that Jesus may have relied on his supernatural.
Well, this is like way embarrassing. I'm the one that hadn't turned my phone off. And I had it on because I was waiting on Sandra to get here. She had to go help somebody get to, long story, a Christian broke down on the road down in Saluda, and she's been down to retrieve them. She just got here a minute ago, and I had my phone on in case she had a problem. We had to go retrieve Sandra. So, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was saying that I think it would be wrong for us to assume that Jesus relied on some supernatural strength or something to have the endurance to make a trip such as this, because as we read through all of the Gospels, we see not one time did Jesus ever perform a miracle to benefit himself.
That's right.
Or to somehow lessen his burden.
And that he endured certain things so that he knows and understands our afflictions. And that's why when he makes intercession for us in prayer, he understands our pain. Even like dealing with the death of Lazarus and the emotions that are invoked there.
I believe when he, with the woman at the well, it said he was weary from the journey.
Absolutely, that's right, that's right. Yeah, and he was there to get water because he was thirsty. Yeah, okay. Another quick map here, just an overview. You know, satellite's not a very good picture. It's the best I could find, though. You see the Temple Mount? Okay, so there is the, you know, like the city of Jerusalem, you know, today. So this would be the Kidron Valley coming here. We've looked at pictures of this up close, remember? And so we're trying to get the lay of the land. So this is the east side of Jerusalem, Kidron Valley. Here's the Mount of Olives. And here is Bethany, which is kind of over the top of the Mount of Olives. There's another short valley, and it's about halfway up the other hill over there. Just trying to put some things in our mind, okay? So it's just about 2 miles away. So when Jesus comes to Bethany, do you suppose that the Jews in Jerusalem are going to know about that?
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They're going to know about that, you know, right away. We'll find out the best case. That they're going to know about this right away. Because what are the Jews wanting to do at this point?
They want to
kill him. I mean, they've already determined that. I mean, it's fixing to get tuned up a little bit more, but they've already, you know, been trying to stone him. And so, we're back into the text here again. So, the call has come, you know, to Jesus. To come. It come from Mary and Martha. We can read about, just a side point here, where else in the Gospels do we read about Mary and Martha? Well, Luke chapter 10. You know, they're introduced to us there as well. And just real quick, let me read something to you. Just to put this in our mind. So we're remembering Mary and Martha and other exchanges that have taken place. Luke chapter 10, verse 38. Now it came to pass as they went that he, that's Jesus, entered a certain village. And a certain woman named Martha received him into her house, and she had a sister called Mary, who also sat at Jesus' feet and heard his word. Mary was very interested in listening to all that Jesus said. Verse 40. But Martha was distracted with much serving, and she came to him and said, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Therefore, tell her to help me. And Jesus answered and said to her, Martha, Martha, you are worried and troubled about many things, but one thing is needed, and Mary has chosen that good part, which will not be taken away from her. A previous experience with Martha and Mary. And here we are in John chapter 11, again introduced into the story with Lazarus, and their brother. And so, you know, the word is received, or been received by Jesus. You know, Lord, the one whom you love is sick. And when Jesus heard that, he said, this is what he said to his disciples there, you know, beyond the Jordan, this sickness is not to death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God may be glorified through it. Now, that's a very key point. And yet it's one that it seems as though the disciples kind of missed. You know, that doesn't seem to like sink in. You know, because as the story goes on, it's told to us again how Jesus loved Martha and Mary and Lazarus. And that when he heard that he was sick, he stayed 2 more days. And then he said to his disciples, let's go to Judea again. Well, their first concern is, Rabbi, what are you thinking? Do you not remember what happened last time we were there? We had to leave. I mean, that's what comes, you know, to their mind again. The Jews sought to stone you. Have you forgotten this? You know, what happened there? And yet, Jesus already, he already knew what was going to happen. He already had the plan. He had waited deliberately, you know, this time before determining to go back. And yet his disciples here, I suppose after 2 days, they've already forgotten what Jesus had said with regard to this sickness is not to death, but it's for the glory of God, that the Son of God may be glorified. That seems to have slipped away. And yet that is the key point. That's what this whole episode is about, as the text continues on. You know, from a personal standpoint with Jesus, I wonder, was it hard to wait? I mean, he loved Lazarus. This was his friend. And he could have easily healed him. Whether he was there or not, he could have healed him. We've seen that demonstrated with Jesus as well. And there's nothing in the text said about that. I don't want to carry that too far, but don't you wonder just a little bit how that affected him? And he would know the grief that Mary and Martha were going to deal with.
Well, there is something said in the text about it later.
What's that?
It says Jesus went.
Well, yeah. He becomes overwhelmed with emotion. When he is there and he sees this, he sees those others, the other Jews who had come to comfort Mary and Martha. We've all been there. You do fine until you get with the family at the funeral home. And it becomes overwhelming. Jesus was like that too. You know, that became overwhelming to him as well. Does it seem a little bit peculiar to me, to you, that Jesus said he was glad he was not there when Lazarus died? Doesn't that just sound kind of funny in some ways? Yes.
I think an earthly on that word, they tell you the one you love, from a man's standpoint, they're thinking maybe this is closing more to the government, but no, God has no partiality to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true. Okay, yes. Yeah, good thoughts. What else is in mind?
When we read all of this, we get to know these people as a family, as real people, and he's done a marvelous job of putting this together to say, you know, these are real people.
In a personal way.
Yeah, we read Bible stories sometimes, and they have not the impact on us because they're just Bible stories.
It's like we've been invited into this story. In a very personal way. That's right.
And the sisters even dickering together. I'm having to do all the work.
That's true. It's an interesting personal relationship, a family relationship that Jesus has with them. You know, when Jesus said, after receiving the word of the death of Lazarus, you know, that he was glad that he was not there when Lazarus died, Jesus was making a point. Which, as we said before, Jesus knew from the very beginning why he was doing this. He knew from the very beginning the sickness is not to death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God may be glorified. Jesus understood and knew that from the very beginning. And so then there's this point, too, about Lazarus sleeping and some confusion about that. What does that mean? Well, you know, in Scripture, there's a number of times that the term sleep is used with regard, you know, to death. And so Jesus understood and knew exactly what that was, and he clarified that Lazarus is dead. There was no misunderstanding at that point. And so when Jesus arrived at the tomb, it had been 4 days now. That's clarified in the text. It had been 4 days, you know, since he had died. I can imagine there's been a lot that's happened in 4 days. I mean, we are beyond just the preparation, but the burial has taken place now. What do you suppose Mary and Martha were thinking? Well, the text kind of tells us, but can we imagine what they were thinking when Jesus came walking up? And their emotions. Oh, Lord, if you had been here, it is said, if you had been here, you know, you could have saved him. I mean, there was confidence in faith and the power of Jesus. They believed, for sure, no question.
Imagine if he would have been there and not saved him, what the response would have been. Maybe that's why he's saying, I'm glad I wasn't there.
Yeah. Yes, I think that's a key point. It is.
They believed that he could have healed him, but they didn't even dream that he could raise him.
So as the story goes on, you know, even Mary and Martha, with the faith that they had in Jesus, are going to have their faith elevated to new heights. You know, as the text goes on, verse 17. Then Jesus, when Jesus came, he found that he had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Now Bethany was near Jerusalem, about 2 miles away. And many of the Jews came to Martha and Mary to comfort them concerning their brother. And then Martha, as soon as she heard that Jesus was coming, went and met him. But Mary was sitting in the house. Then Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now, whatever you ask of God, God will give you." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." And Martha said to him, "I know that he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he may die, he shall live. And whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this?" And she said to him, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who has come into the world." It's interesting to me that to Martha, there was no question. Jesus has identified that he is the Son of God on different occasions. Mary and Martha understood that. I mean, they knew that he was the Son of God and have great confidence in his power and ability. Now, it's interesting here. Consider the discussion on the resurrection from our questions. Consider the discussion of the resurrection. What resurrection was Martha referring to compared to that of Jesus? What did she know and believe about the resurrection?
The resurrection of the dead, you know, yeah, that passed from this life, awaiting the resurrection of eternal life.
So Martha was not of the same mind as the Sadducees, who did not believe in the resurrection. She believed in the resurrection, and she knew, she believed that, yes, I know, Lord, he will be raised again.
And she says in the last day, so she's obviously speaking of
that which is to come. Yeah. And so, you know, she was thinking about that general resurrection. In fact, a couple of passages I noted here. John chapter 5. Look back here just real quick. John chapter 5. Jesus has spoke about some of these things before. John chapter 5 and verse 24, beginning. "Most assuredly, I say to you, he who hears my word and believes in him who sent me has everlasting life and shall not come into judgment, but has passed from death into life. Most assuredly, I say to you, the hour is coming and now is when the dead will hear the voice of the Son of God, and those who hear will live. For as the Father has life in himself, so he has given to the Son to have life in himself, and has given him authority to execute judgment also, because he is the Son of Man. Do not marvel at this, for the hour is coming in which all who are in the graves will hear his voice and come forth. Those who have done good to the resurrection of life, and those who have done evil to the resurrection of condemnation. I can of myself do nothing. As I hear, I judge, and my judgment is righteous, because I do not seek my own will, but the will of the Father who sent me." Chapter 6, page or two over. Chapter 6 and verse 39. Jesus again. "And this is the will of the Father who sent me, that of all he has given me I should lose nothing, but should raise it up at the last day. And this is the will of him who sent me, that everyone who sees the Son and believes in him may have everlasting life, and I will raise him up at the last day." So Martha knew these things, and she believed these things, that there's going to be a great resurrection, called upon by the Lord. And yet there is something more to it. And even in the text here, when Jesus says, "I am the resurrection and the life," well, what's he referring to? You know, what does he mean? Here's one of the great texts of John. "I am the resurrection and the life." What comments can we make with regard to that? There's some different things we might say. What would you comment?
Well, he's identified himself as the one who has the power to bring about this thing that Mary anticipates.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it's something that is sort of automatic, or that that God only, God's going to do it apart from some purpose and some intention. But Jesus is saying, I am the one that is going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I am the resurrection.
Yes. Okay. All right.
Yes. Yeah, I was just saying, yes, no man takes his life. He lays it down and he can take it up again. Only he can do that.
Mm-hmm.
He is the resurrection.
Okay. All right.
He is the source.
Yeah. Source. Yes. Right.
There would not be a resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
Were it not.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, you could say that raising Lazarus was, he had been talking about being the resurrection and alive, and that raising Lazarus was a physical proof that he had power over death also.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's right. Right. This is a fascinating part of the story to me. In what is happening in the short term event of the story. And yet symbolically what it means in the bigger picture. I mean, Jesus, as we have seen, as we've come through, we're almost up to that point of Jesus being arrested. You know, we have seen Jesus and his teaching as it has become more bold, as the day has grown closer. And now we're just days away, you know, from his arrest. And he has become even more bold in some of the things that he has declared. Martha already has a pretty good handle on who Jesus is, that he is the Son of God. And she's not fearing death in view of the fact that she knows there's going to be a resurrection, and she is one of those who believe in Jesus Christ. And so she knows, even in the death of her son, does she grieve? Her son, her brother. Does she grieve? Well, yes, she grieves. Others have come to grieve as well. You know, because death is painful. From generation to generation, we grieve at the sight of death. Because death is not pretty. It's not intended to be pretty. But it's those who have hope of resurrection that can look at death in a different way. Martha is able to do that. She is able to see beyond Lazarus sleeping, so to speak, and look at life in view of that which is to come. She's got a picture on that, but she has no clue what's about to happen. She has no idea what Jesus is about to do.
And Jesus is also tracking them just a week or so down the road. He's going to die.
Yeah.
And he's giving them an example.
Yeah.
This is,
yeah.
I can conquer this.
Yeah. And so when he says right now, I am the resurrection and the life, it might mean something to Martha right now. But what's it going to mean in about 14 days?
30.
You see, it's going to take on a much bigger and greater meaning in just a few days. And so that's why I say when he says here, I am the resurrection and the life, it's much bigger than the event of raising Lazarus. We said a couple of weeks ago, it's like the raising of Lazarus had very little to do about the raising of Lazarus. You know, the bigger picture of what was happening and taking place was much bigger than that, and what it was symbolizing, and what Jesus was meaning when he said, I am the resurrection and the life. You know, Jesus uses the word die in verses 25 and in verses 26, and yet there's a difference in the way the word is used. Jesus said to Martha, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he may die, shall live. And whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe in this? The word die, same word. We see a little different meaning in verse. What's the difference? What are we seeing? It means it's the same word. He who believes in me, though he may die, shall live. Whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. So there's the bigger picture to to what Jesus is saying. Good thoughts, good comments tonight.